Get the best quality paints from Dutch Boy for all your projects at Menards. MaxBond Plus exterior paint and primer in one is designed to stand strong against extreme weather. It provides max adhesion, hide, and performance, and repels rain in just 90 minutes after application. And with Dutch Boy's high-performing paints that last, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards today and get your paint project started. Save big money
at Menards. What's so poopy about a poop deck?
What exactly is a landlubber, and can you lub anywhere else?
What nautical terms have sailed their way into the English language?
Did pirates actually say things like shiver me timbers?
Shiver me timber!
We hope you like the cut of our jib as we show our true colours in another episode of Words Unraveled. Avast ye podcast lubbers. Welcome to another Words Unraveled.
Aye, mateys. Today we set sail on the etymological tides of nautical terms.
You said you were going to do hammy pirate and you did hammy pirate.
I want to be a pirate at all times. That's where I am in life.
Coming up in the podcast today, we're looking at all things nautical. As Jess put it, or Pirate Jess put it, we're taking to the high seas. So we're going to be covering stuff like nautical idioms. So idioms that you might not even know have come from maritime history. We're going to look a bit at pirate speak. What else are we going to try and cover, Jess?
We're going to dig into words that derive from nautical situations and nautical contexts. So one of the most interesting facets of English, I think, is that so many words derive from the Greek naus, or ship, and nautes, meaning sailor.
Which is where the word nautical comes from.
Exactly. Nautical, navy, navigate. There's also a word navicular, meaning boat-shaped, which is fun. Oh. And then there's nausea, the condition of feeling like you're going to vomit, literally means seasickness or ship sickness.
No way. So all types of nausea are essentially seasickness, be it on land or on the waves.
Basically. And then the Latin term ad nauseam refers to something that has been done or repeated so often that it's become annoying or tiresome or to sickness.
That's what it means, literally, to the point of being sick.
But specifically seasick.
One of the things I like about ad nauseam is you can use it with people without them necessarily knowing that you're referring to vomit. It's always nice to be able to sneak in a little bit of crudeness unspotted.
Absolutely. I think it's a funnier term than we often give it credit for. But it's not always in like vomit-related words. We also have astronaut, which I think is the cutest etymology in the English language. It means star sailor.
That's nice. And then the Russians had the cosmonauts, which were cosmos sailors. And then, of course, you've got aeronautics as well, which is like an air sailor.
Mm-hmm. And then in mythology, you've got the Argonauts, as of Jason and the Argonauts on the Argo.
That's also a famous boat called the Nautilus, right?
That's right. And Nautilus is from that same root, from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And it's like basically a poetic form of the Greek word for sailor.
There's also the anatomy of a boat, which can be quite a sort of complicated vocabulary, can't it? So you can't just say left and right on a boat. You have to say starboard and port, or port and starboard, to put those the right way round. And then you've got the front and back as well.
Fore and aft, right? Yeah,
the fore and aft, or the stern and bow, as they're also known, right? The fore and aft, actually, that really helps you know which one you're talking about, but stern and bow, still a little bit confusing. Allow me to explain, though, because there's interesting etymologies behind every single one of these. Starboard is a really good one. So starboard comes from an old Germanic term. Loads of these, by the way, they're really, really old terms from boats way back before the English language was around, right? So old Germanic boats would have a rudder just on one side. A rudder is what you use to steer a boat. So starboard has nothing to do with stars. It comes from steerboard.
Ah, right? That makes sense.
The board being the side of the ship. Yes, so starboard would be the side that you steer on. The opposite of starboard wasn't port. It was actually larboard.
I have heard that.
Larboard is influenced by the word starboard, right? But it was probably more likely something along the lines of larderboard to start with. And larder, anyone who speaks German will know that larder means to load. Laden means to load. But it's where our word load comes from.
Right. Okay. So the loading side.
It's the side that you load things on. And then eventually we change that because it sounds too much like starboard, and we go with port instead. And the origin of that usage of port is a little bit debatable, because there are those who say, oh, well, it's ports because, you know, you sort of dock on that side.
That would be my assumption, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But actually, the more popular idea among etymologists is that it's related to the word portal or porthole, or, you know, actually, you know, the word port is kind of related to that as well in its sort of broader sense, the idea of it being an entry point. And so the port side of a boat is the side where you have kind of the holes that you're shoving the stuff you're loading through.
Implying a door. That makes sense. Exactly. Is that also the idea behind like an actual port, is that it's an entry point into a location?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And that's a port is an entry, and a harbor is where you'd actually stop. So what about the stern, which is at the back, and the bow, which is at the front? Well, the stern relates to the fact we're back to steering again, but later boats are steered, you know, from the back. So that's how you can remember that, mm-hmm. that the stern is at the back because you steer from the back, and it kind of sounds like steer. And the bow, well, actually the word bow seems to possibly be related to an old Germanic word for the shoulders.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which would mean it's related to a tree's boughs, which are obviously like the arms, the shoulders of a tree.
B-O-U-G-H. Interesting.
B-O-U-G-H, yes, spelt differently. So we've got very deep into the etymology of the parts of a boat. But a lot of those terms for parts of a boat, not just those ones, but the many bits and bobs around the boat, the many strings and ropes and masts and sails pop up in a lot of nautical idioms, which I think is something that if we're tackling this subject, people would expect us to talk about. Are there any that you've ever wondered about?
The one that first came to mind was the cut of your jib, which I know a jib was a type of sail. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Jib is a triangular sail at the front of a boat, and they would kind of be unique to different countries. So you'll be able to judge, or you might judge, an approaching boat by the cut of its jib, so by the shape of this specific sail at the front. So that's the cut of his jib, the cut of one's jib. But you've also got to tow the line, mm-hmm. which a lot of people sometimes think is tow, T-O-W, but it's not. It's T-O-E, as in, you know, the fingers of your feet. And that comes from the British Navy, where British naval seamen would be made to line up on deck for inspection. They would have bare feet, and they would line up along the seams of the deck. And basically, to toe the line was to have your little toesies right up against that line, and, you know, to be standing ready for inspection, to be complying with orders.
Fabulous. Another one that comes up in the office space a little bit is the term scuttlebutt, or like, what's the scuttlebutt, which is also a nautical term for gossip and rumors and interpersonal news among, you know, coworkers nowadays, but then sailors back in the day, instead of, it's basically the sailor's equivalent of water cooler talk. So a scuttlebutt, a butt, is a cask of fresh drinking water aboard a ship, and there was a hole, a scuttle, in the top of it, and sailors might loiter around it, and as they sip water, they might chatter about all the happenings on the ship.
And of course, to scuttle a boat is to deliberately sink it.
To put a hole in it.
Stick
right.
A hole in it. There you go. Scuttle exactly. And butt. It fits together nicely. What else have we got? Oh, to be taken aback is supposedly a nautical term.
Ooh.
Aback obviously just means backwards. And if a sail gets taken aback, it's basically been blown back on the supporting structure that's holding it up, which is, you know, obviously not great news.
Oh, interesting.
Someone sent me an email the other day asking if I knew why so many nautical terms had that A prefix on the verb, like aback, adrift, ashore. And I wasn't sure. Have you ever thought about this one, Jess?
If I had to guess, I would say it's because a lot of these are Germanic terms. So words like ashore, ahead, aside, aback, asleep, above, all of these are Germanic, and it's from the Old English prefix meaning like in or onto. And I think that a lot of these nautical terms have stuck around as Germanic terms rather than being replaced by Romance terms in English, because it was such a critical part of like the culture of Britain.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, we should say that there are an unusually large amount of nautical terms in the English language, and it is primarily because, one, Britain is an island nation, and partially sort of following on from that fact, Britain had an extremely powerful navy, you know, the most powerful naval force in the world for quite a long time. So not only were people using a lot of naval terms back home and within the navy, but they were also spreading these naval terms around the world. So that's why there are a lot of naval terms in the English language, and a lot of them hiding in plain sight, like we've just been talking about. For example, you know, to take a different tack, people might not necessarily know that that refers to how you sail into the wind. You zigzag, you change direction.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, it's called tacking. So to change tack, you are changing your direction to still be able to move forward, you know. Another one is to show your true colors, which, yeah, it comes from conflict on the high seas.
Is this where we're getting into pirates?
We're starting to get there, yes. And we're talking about flags, right? Colors are flags. And a slightly naughty ship, perhaps filled with plundering privateers or pirates. We'll get into the difference between those, actually, because we might need to. If you were trying to sneak up on a ship, you might change your flag to that of a friendly nation. And then when you finally start to battle that ship, you will reveal your true colors and hoist the actual flag under which you're sailing and fighting.
That makes sense. So not necessarily pirates, but deceptive sailors nonetheless.
Yeah, it's bad form at sea. You are supposed to fight under the flag that you are actually representing.
It reminds me of the term Jolly Roger, a pirate flag. Jolly here means like gallant. It's an older term. It was also paired with other names, like a Jolly Robin was a handsome or charming man who was very gallant. And the Roger here is a little bit debated, but sometimes it's associated with things that are large, like a ship, or I've also seen it referred to as something like to Roger was a verb meaning to like beat with violence or something along those lines.
It has a slightly different meaning now. I don't know if it does in American slang, but in British slang, to Roger something is rather different.
I actually don't know that one.
It's to have sex with it.
I mean, I see the connection there. It makes sense.
In a lot of senses, to have sex with something uses a term that actually means to attack it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of disconcerting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, lots of words for like assault refer to like imply like repeated violence. Same with, you know, words for like sexual violence and things too. So that would make sense. And same with plunder, I believe also has, it implies forcible taking and things like that. Though I think that one ultimately was a word for like baggage or clothes or household goods. So plunder would be just like the goods you took.
Yeah, I see. So from something very mundane to something very aggressive.
Yes.
One of the big debates in the UK is what we should call a national flag. So the flag of the United Kingdom, Great Britain and Northern Ireland. It colloquially gets called the Union Jack, but a jack is a flag flown from a boat.
Oh.
So unless it's being flown from a boat, you should just call it the Union Flag. And some people will be very pedantic about that and will correct others for saying Union Jack. But I think Union Jack has just kind of become a name for it, like a proper name for it, rather than a description of it, which is, you know, what it would have been at one point.
I also like the like metaphorical idea of the UK as like a ship sailing forth into the future.
Oh, I like that. Someone should steal that for the election. Yeah, that's nice.
Speaking of plunder and such, I've been surprised to learn in the past that the term booty, as in like the thing that pirates steal, is a very old concept. Whether you're talking about pirate booty or a pirate's booty, that is its butt, or a pirate getting booty, yeah, that is sex. All these booties are from the same source, implying something you want and something you take. The Middle English version of this term was a word for plunder taken from an enemy, and it's from an old French word of the same meaning, ultimately Germanic though, and it's thought to mean perhaps something that's helpful or an advantage or something that you exchange. The same sense is also found in the phrase to boot, as in the emphatic phrase to boot. Like it implies an advantage. When it comes to bodies, though, booty, of course, has two senses. It can be like the mild G-rated noun for your rear end, or it can refer to sex, as in like getting booty.
I'd be getting some booty tonight.
Exactly.
Oh, so no. Good. Let's get on to pirates talk.
Since I've already gotten in there.
This is really the fun end of maritime history, isn't it? Although they shouldn't be fun. These are horrible.
Oh, yeah. No, they're terrifying.
Horrible people.
They're only fun because of pop culture. And most of the terms that we associate with pirates, especially like the golden age of pirates, are thanks to pop culture. Booty is one of the older terms. But most of them, most of the terms that we associate with pirates and like even the pirate accent that we associate with like Long John Silver came well after the golden age of pirates, which was from the 1650s to like the 1750s, give or take. But Robert Louis Stevenson was the one who gave us a lot of these terms and some of these ideas like walking the plank. It wasn't even until like the 1950s that Robert Newton played Long John Silver in an adaptation of Treasure Island, and his Cornish accent and like the R we often associate with pirates are mostly thanks to him.
Do you know who told me that fact about Robert Newton the first time?
Who's that?
YouTuber Tom Scott.
Ooh.
Because I went to university with him. And back then, he used to run the UK leg of International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Ah, love this.
And he had this persona, Mad Cap'n Tom Scott. He actually got elected as student union president at my university as Mad Cap'n Tom, which says an awful lot about the democratic process, I'll tell you that. But he first told me in his pirate voice that be where the voice be coming from Robert Newton's portrayal of Long John Silver.
That's the best way to learn about that.
Yeah, it really is. Nice little YouTube celebrity name drop as well. Yeah, a lot do come from Treasure Island. A phrase that is associated, I mean, it doesn't come from Treasure Island, but I think it was made sort of famous from it.
Sometimes they're not like specifically from Treasure Island. Sometimes they were adapted into it. But a lot of times a lot of these words come from pop culture and storytelling that romanticized the golden age of pirates in the century afterward. And Treasure Island is probably one of the more iconic ones of those. That and like Pirates of Penzance.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, Gilbert and Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Treasure Island, I think of the parrot, Captain Flint, and I think of Pieces of Eight! Pieces of Eight! I was trying to decide whether to do the voice or not, and I did it. And
I think it's good. Commit okay. to it. It's about...
it's done now. I did it. Have you ever thought about where Pieces of Eight comes from as a phrase?
I have, but I don't remember. Can you tell me?
Yes, I can. So British colonists operating around North America and the Caribbean would sometimes run out of currency from back home. So they would use Spanish currency instead. And the most common Spanish coin was called the Spanish silver dollar. And it was worth 8 reales, which were the currency from back home in Spain. So a piece means a coin, right? So this was a piece of 8. Although some people say that referencing Pieces of Eight is that because they got cut up into 8 pieces, because you've got to bear in mind that the value of a coin was directly related to its weight.
Right.
So if you divided it into 8 pieces, it was worth an eighth of what it was worth now. Now, if you cut up a dollar, it would be worth, I think, precisely nothing. But back then, if you cut up a piece of 8 into 8 pieces, you ended up with 8 lots of 1 real. If you got 2 of those, you would have a quarter of a dollar. You would have 2 bits. And if I get my American slang right, 2 bits means a quarter, right?
That makes sense.
And that's where it comes from.
Excellent. Then that's doubloon is also Spanish, right? It's it basically means like double something, a coin that was worth twice as much as another Spanish gold piece. I think it was called the pistole or something like that.
Oh, okay. I can imagine it being French. It sounds like sort of a doublon.
Oh yeah, it definitely traveled to English from French, but originally from Spanish. You mentioned avast at the top of the hour, and that's actually a golden age of pirates term. It's short for hold fast, basically, and may have been inspired by the Dutch version of the same term. in terms of its pronunciation. So I think that one's neat.
So when someone shouts avast, what they're saying is, they're either saying stop what you're doing or just keep doing precisely what you're doing, basically. Hold fast, hold steady.
Nowadays, I feel like we just use it as a general, like, piratey interjection.
Hello! Exactly as I did at the start. Although I do insist that anyone watching or listening to this, as soon as they hear me say avast, do stop precisely what they're doing and pay attention.
Of course. In Old English, the word pirate didn't exist. It was sea scather or sea scather. And then a pirate ship was a thief ship.
Oh, they've got lots of lovely terms for the sea in Old English.
I love the compounds.
Yeah, they called the sea the Wael Way, which is the whale way, or the world water, which means the world water.
That's cool.
Yeah, you know, the sea was very important to them as well. You know, one of only four Old English poems that we have is called The Seafarer, and mm-hmm. it is from the point of view of an old mariner, I suppose, an old seafarer, reflecting on his life and also reflecting on his passage to the afterlife, treating it like, you know, his next great voyage.
That's neat.
Yeah, the association between English and the sea goes a very long way back. But to go back to where you've just been talking about the fact that, you know, Old English didn't have the word pirate, we should talk about the difference between, you know, a pirate, a privateer, a buccaneer as well. I mean, a pirate and a privateer, well, basically a privateer is being paid to do it, right? They've been hired by a country to go and plunder other lands and other people's boats on right. behalf of the sovereign. So Francis Drake is probably the most famous one, who was sailing the high seas on behalf of Queen Elizabeth I of England.
So exciting. The word pirate itself is basically the Greek word for a pirate, which means someone who attacks. Oh. But a buccaneer, the swashbuckling pirate type we call a buccaneer, literally means one who roasts meat on a boucan, which was a type of grill used by the Tupi people, who were native to what is now Brazil and whose language blended with European languages during the golden age of pirates. Ending the word privateer, which, like you said, is a someone who's employed, a private contractor, so to speak, follows in buccaneers' footsteps, and first referred to like a privately owned arms ship, and shortly thereafter came to refer to the sailors on it.
I see. Buccaneer as well. That's a word that's basically specific to the Caribbean, but there's also a word specific to pirates operating in the Mediterranean. That's corsair, which comes from a very specific period, a very tense period between the sort of Muslims of the Mediterranean and the Christians of the Mediterranean, and the fact that they would clash on the high seas as well.
The first thing that comes to mind when I hear the word corsair is the style of that ship, which I think is just beautiful, but also looks very like classically piratey.
I wonder, I would have to look this up. I wonder if it's related to the word Corsica. It seems too similar, doesn't it?
That would make sense. There's also swashbuckler, wasn't specifically associated with seafaring types initially. In the 1500s, it meant any swaggery fighter who carries a sword, with the word swash referring to the heavy blow of a weapon and a shield or a buckler on the other end. So you're a sword and shield holder. But it was associated with like bombastic types who made their whole identity about being military and soldier types. So sort of in the same vein as like chauvinists later.
So it's violent but befitting. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's something that we're coming across quite a lot here, isn't it? Landlubber. That's a pirate favorite.
I love this one.
I didn't know that you could be any other sort of lubber until I looked this one up.
You can be any kind of lover. That's right. It's a lot of people, and I think that I used to assume that it was a weird pronunciation of lover, like land lover.
Yeah, or liver, maybe. Land liver.
Right. Yeah. But instead, it's referring to somebody who's large or clumsy or unintelligent or idle, that lubber part.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
That is right. And it was a term that primarily was used to describe lazy monks. You could mm-hmm. be an abbey lubber, right, mm-hmm. which was the laziest monk in the abbey. Or you could play the lubber, which was an idiom from, I don't know, 500, 600 years ago.
So what you're saying is that a lubber didn't lazily lub on land exclusively, but could lazily lub basically anywhere.
Yes. Very good.
There's also a term lubberwort, which was a fictional laziness-inducing plant. And there was Lubberland, a mythical land of pleasant idleness, similar to like the Big Rock Candy Mountain that we hear of in folk songs today.
That's great. I need to get myself some lubberwort.
I think that might just be called cannabis these days. Speaking of breaking things into pieces, shiver me timbers wasn't really a thing that people said, but shiver did show up in nautical contexts because it refers to a small piece or fragment or splinter of something, specifically a ship that was smashed to pieces. So shiver me or shiver my timbers refers to the splintering of wooden ships upon rough seas.
Ah, okay. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. You say it wasn't really said. Is that another one of those ones that was from Treasure Island or something like that?
I believe so, yes. It's Long John Silver phrasing. Oh, yes. In fact, he specifically says, "So," said he, "here's Jim Hawkins, shiver my timbers, dropped in like, eh? Well, come, I take that friendly."
It's amazing how much one book has influenced our idea of piracy.
It also appeared a little bit earlier. I missed a reference. There's a 1795 reference in a publication called Tomahawk or Censor General. It says, "Peace, shiver my timbers. What a noise ye make. Ye seem to be fonder of peace than ye be of quiet."
That's quite the burn.
It is.
Was it again?
"Fonder of peace than ye be of quiet." Basically, like, shut up.
I like that. I'm going to use that one. Can I talk about poop?
Oh, please.
Poop deck always raised a snigger, continues to raise a snigger. Do you know what the poop deck actually is?
Tell me.
So the poop is the frontmost part of a boat. So that means it's at the bow. That's what we've learned.
Right.
And not only could you have a poop deck, but basically anything that is at the front of a boat could be referred to as a poop something. So in the past, there's been a poop rail, a poop sail, a poop ladder, a poop lantern, and even a poop ornament, which was a rather cruel term for useless apprentice.
Huh. I would think it would be a word for a figurehead, but that's funny.
No, exactly. I mean, I could only find... So I thought, oh, that must be exactly... The thing that you stick at the front must be the poop ornament.
Right.
But no, couldn't find any references to an actual part of the ship that is a poop ornament.
No.
Only snide references to, you know, low-performing apprentices who were poop ornaments, who essentially may as well, you know, have been inanimate.
Okay, but why did we call the front of the ship the poop?
Shall I etymology search poop? Oh, no. It's not the first sort of poop that comes up.
I don't see any good reason, aside from the fact that it's from the Latin poopus.
It's not from the Latin poopus. Really?
P-U-P-P-I-S, which was also a word for, interestingly, the stern of a ship.
That's not very helpful, is it?
No, it's not helpful at all.
If they can't be consistent on board these ships, it's as if they were all drunk. Or three sheets to the wind, by the way, another nautical idiom.
Fabulous. Yeah. Wait, hang on. So is that when you, like, if you want to go really fast or if you're out of control, you release three sails or something like that?
Makes a lot of sense to think that, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. It makes sense to think that a sheet would be a sail.
Mm-hmm.
But a sheet on a ship actually isn't a sail. It's a rope.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. So if you had three ropes to the wind, three sheets to the wind, that was three ropes that weren't doing their job in supporting the sails in the way that they're supposed to.
Right.
So it was a certain level of chaos created by having three sheets to the wind. You weren't really in control, as a drunken sailor might not be.
That makes sense. Another term that's associated with pirates is scalawag or scallywag, depending on who says this. This isn't specifically pirate-oriented, and it comes much later than the Golden Age of Pirates, probably never used by a real pirate of the eye patch and peg leg variety. And its origin isn't 100% certain, but it's most likely a combination of the Germanic word wag and the Scottish word scallig. Just like today, wag referred to like a back and forth motion, just like a dog's tail or a wagging tongue. But it also meant like wavering or lacking in steadfastness. So someone who was a wag was a rascally, disreputable type, or sometimes a mischievous child. A clock with a pendulum was also called a wag at the walls, and someone destined to swing from the gallows was a wag halter.
Wag halter.
Right, isn't that interesting? The scala portion of scalawag may come from Scalloway, one of Scotland's Shetland Islands. And in the 1800s, many of the poorer people in Scalloway traveled to America looking for work, and they were sometimes called scalawags, the wag ending because they were lower class and assumed to be disreputable in the same way that we stereotype and discriminate against immigrants today.
Yeah, we still have the word scally as English slang, and it's not very nice.
Right, that would make sense. Not one that we use over here, but we still associate scalawag with pirates. And then over time, it just became a word for any disreputable person. And it was in the American South associated with white people who opposed the Confederacy and supported racial equality, which nowadays, and outside of that context, those are the good guys. So maybe a good thing to be a scalawag in that context.
Yeah. It's interesting that what you were saying about the wag part there and it being sort of to do with wavering and such, because actually, subscribers to my newsletter will already know this, but I recently learned that the wave that we do with our hand and the waves of the sea, those two words etymologically not related.
Ooh,
they're not,
interesting.
They're not the same, right? So the old way of describing a wave on water, right, was a war, W-A-W, but the pronunciation and the spelling was influenced by the wave of a hand or the wave of anything, you know, something that's doing an oscillating motion. And so the word actually turned into wave.
Huh. But
before that, it was war. And yeah, they're not related, but the wave of a hand is related to the waggle of a dog's tail, for example. And it's this oscillating motion. So you can see why those two ideas got confounded, right? Because if a wave is doing anything, it's kind of oscillating. It's certainly moving to and fro.
Do you think that W-A-W term, do you think that's maybe imitative of maybe the sound of waves?
Could be, couldn't it?
The motion of them, yeah.
It could be, yeah.
I don't know if it's classically associated with pirates, but I think in the Pirates of the Caribbean series, a lot of viewers associated savvy with as like a pirate term. And it is from around the time of the Golden Age of Pirates. And it was a slangy adaptation of the French savez-vous or do you know?
Yeah.
So like, it's sort of like saying, you know.
My mum sometimes used the word savvy to describe someone who's kind of in the know.
Yeah, somebody who's smart, same deal.
Yeah, who knows.
On a previous episode, we also talked about ahoy in the context of the bell telephone. I believe you also addressed where it originally came from, right?
Yeah, we talked about how it was from Dutch, just the Dutch word ahoy.
Salute to Dutch pirates then for gifting us some of these words. So we've sailed well into the world of piratey and nautical terms. What should we close out with?
I think it makes an awful lot of sense to finish with the nautical idiom, the bitter end.
Absolutely.
This is one that I only just learned from a video I watched on the internet. And they said in this video that the bitter end comes from the fact that ropes would be tied at one end on the boat to something called a bit. And so as you were pulling the rope through, once you got to the end where the bit was, the bit end, it means you were running out of rope.
Huh.
You were near the end of the line.
So is it unrelated to the term bitter as in taste?
It would appear so. So that means that it might actually be a sort of folk etymology, I suppose.
People have infused that phrase with the sense of bitter taste or a bitter sweet experience.
Yeah, until I watched this video that I've just mentioned, I thought the same thing. I thought, we're getting to the end and we're bitter about it. No bitterness here, though, as we come to the end of this edition of Words Unraveled. Thanks a lot for being with us.
We wish you smooth sailing in your etymological adventures.